Let's go to line number one. I guess he's already partying. Dorsey Hager of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council calling us from, what is it, Bloomington, Indiana today? Is that correct?
Bloomington, Indiana, the campus of Indiana University. The Buckeyes and the Hoosiers kick off the Big Ten college football season.
How about that?
But there's lots to talk about in Cleveland, too. I tell you this all the time. I'm a big football guy, but I don't want to wish my summer away. What about the Indians? 23 straight days they play games. They have two doubleheaders in those 23 days. They get a much-deserved day off yesterday, and they go 17-6 in those 23 days. They're getting healthy. They're getting right. They're 20 games over 500, and they're ready for the playoffs. So I'm getting excited.
And we don't even have Michael Brantley back.
Exactly.
And Andrew Miller on top of that. So, yeah, and Kipnis, too. Kipnis has been out. So, yeah, I'm getting excited. It's almost identical to what happened last year. They started heating up around this time, and this is when you want to be hot. And you take out New York in New York, that says a lot.
Oh, yeah.
It says a whole lot.
And I'm amazed at how great their starting pitching has been. I mean, the three-game series with the Royals just totally shut them down. Didn't even allow a run in the three games.
I know. I went to the game on Friday night with my daughter and son-in-law. We had a great time there. It was fun. Just you could feel the electricity in the air, you know? Good stuff. All right, let's talk about labor. We're going into Labor Day, and the Supreme Court is going to rule probably next year on right to work. I mean, it's kind of a follow-through from what happened with Friedrichs and the death of Antonin Scalia, who kind of tied that Friedrichs case up. But lo and behold, there's other cases out there, aren't there?
There's several other cases that are looking to go to the Supreme Court. And, you know, just a little bit of history, and we talked about this last year, and I don't want to replay 2016, but, you know, we were talking to our members, obviously, about voting your paycheck, voting your wallet, some of the labor issues that Donald Trump was on the other side of. And one of the things that a lot of people didn't talk about, but I know you and I talked about extensively on your show, is, you know, a vote for the next president is a vote for balance of power in the Supreme Court, because that president's going to be able to pick that Supreme Court justice. And when Trump was running, he released his list of who he was going to choose. And one of those people on the list was somebody he chose, and that was Neil Gorsuch. And Neil Gorsuch is never, ever cited with labor. All of his decisions in lower courts where he's been a judge have always been on the side of business. He's never sided with labor or organized labor. And now he's going to be the deciding vote on national right to work. And it looks like the first case that's going to come to them is going to be public sector right to work. So it's going to be your public sector unions, your unions that negotiate with cities, counties, states, municipalities. But if they go to public sector right to work, I mean, we know what's going to happen because we've seen what's happened in Michigan. A lot of unions are going to lose their power. A lot of the unions are going to lose their support. You're going to have members that are going to opt out and not pay union dues. And that's really going to weaken the power and the voice of people and members and organized labor throughout the country to give them the rights to effectively bargain collectively and give power to their membership, you know. So it's like you said, it's coming. We know it's one of the cases that's certainly going to be heard next year. And, I mean, I'm not hearing anything different. I would be very surprised if Neil Gorsuch changes his stance and votes the other way. So it looks like it could happen as soon as next year.
This is the guy, this was the frozen trucker case. He's the guy that ruled against the trucker who there was an accident. It was horrible weather conditions, and he had to pull off to the side of the road. He couldn't even drive. The roads were impassable. And he was pretty much stuck in his truck, and he was going to freeze to death if he left the truck. And he finally got out of there. And the worker, I think the employer let him go because he abandoned his truck. And Gorsuch was the guy in a lower court who ruled in favor of the company. I mean,
yeah,
the guy would have lost his life.
I know. So, again, you know, like I said, we've tried to educate our members and let them know that elections have consequences. And, you know, it's the old thing, you know, what you win at the bargaining table, sometimes you can lose at the ballot box, and it looks like this is going to be one of those cases.
Yeah. Now, I understand a lot of labor organizations are preparing for the worst on this one. What are you hearing, and what about the building trades? I know this is mainly public sector, but nonetheless, it's going to affect everybody.
Yeah, yeah, and they are preparing for the worst, and I know that, you know, I have brothers and sisters in high levels of union representation in Indiana and Michigan, Kentucky, West Virginia, and I know that they've, you know, did the same thing because they've seen this wave coming. You know, you never want to see it come, but like you say, you have to prepare for the worst so that way, you know, you're ready. But they've been dealing with their collective bargaining agreements. They've been dealing with education classes with their membership. A good friend of mine that's on our organizing committee here in Columbus, he's a district organizer for the laborers here in the state of Ohio. And at their training center, I mean, not only do they do, you know, hands-on training with their craft and safety training and stuff, but he's also going in and doing educational classes, and he's even opened them up to the public, which is cool. And he's educating people. His name's Mario Cespedes. He's educating his members and his people on right to work and prevailing wage and, you know, what can happen if some of these, you know, some of these basic fundamentals of the working class are taken away. And it's a good thing. I think it's starting to open people's eyes. I know that I've been working with the people here in Columbus and Central Ohio, Jessica Vernon from the Ohio AFL-CIO, Samantha Trueblood, also some people here, and we've been having meetings across the Central Ohio area where I represent at local organizations, not so much unions, but like Democratic clubs, different party-affiliated places where members and people come to learn about different issues and stuff. And a big thing we've been talking about is right to work, or right to work for less, as we say. And there's been a lot of people that have come that have had a lot of questions about it. I spoke 2 weeks ago in Delaware, Ohio, which is, you know, one county north of Franklin County of Columbus, and we had about 60 people come out to learn about right to work. And a lot of the people that were there were union teachers in Delaware County. Delaware County is a huge Republican stronghold. A lot of the people there were Republicans, and they had no idea what right to work was. And when we explained it to them, you know, and one of the it was really funny. One of the questions that came up is, you know, well, just because a union member is not allowed to pay dues, why would that union member opt out of paying dues? And I'm like, well, it historically happens across the country whenever a state becomes right to work. And I said, you have to think about it like this. I said, you know, we all pay our taxes, right? Mm-hmm. She was like, yeah. And I said, I'm one of those people. And I said, I know I might be on the other side. I said, but I'm one of those people, a fire levy, a library levy, a school levy. Not only am I the first one to go out and vote yes for that in my community, but I'm also campaigning for it, talking to my friends and family members about the importance of voting for it. Why? Because I don't want my house to burn down. I want to drive on nice roads and bridges. I want the people around me in my community to be able to read and write and have some education,
right,
so they're not going around robbing everybody, you know, just basic fundamentals. But there are people out there that if you said to them, hey, you know what, you don't have to pay your taxes this year, but your kid is still going to get a free public education. You're still going to get the benefit of riding on good roads and bridges. The police are going to come to you when somebody robs you. If you catch your house on fire, the fire department's going to come and put that fire out. There's a lot of people that would say, oh, you're still going to do all that? I don't have to pay for it? Hell yeah. Sign me up. I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And when I said it like that, she's like, oh, my God, I understand now. And I'm like, exactly. Exactly. And I don't have the stats in front of me, but I had them that night. I think it was right off the bat, the Michigan State Teachers Association lost like 42% of their membership.
Oh, yeah, I believe it. Same thing happened in Wisconsin when Walker went right to work and destroyed collective bargaining up there for the public sector unions. Yeah, you know what? What you just said to us speaks volumes, the way you put that to one individual. And that's, I think that's what we're going to have to do. It's almost like a one-on-one campaign, because when you say right to work, it just sounds, hey, what's the problem? I should have the right to work. Are you going to stop me from working? And that's the misnomer there. That's the problem. But you know what? There is a price. When your wages go up and unions are involved, there's a price to pay for that. collective bargaining works. And you take a look, we're going into Labor Day, and you're going to see a lot of statistics about workers. I mean, the average worker in America makes about $200 more than a non-union worker. And when you do the math on that, that's 10 grand a year.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the good things that we've done here in the state of Ohio with not only our local elected leaders, and I know I've told you this, with our school board members, our township trustees, our city council people, because those people are the feeder system, and they're going to move up, you know, eventually probably someday into state government, state legislature, or maybe even judicial positions. But I think that's where we've done a good job, not only with them, but also members of the legislature, on educating them on right to work. And if Ohio were to come a right-to-work state, obviously the first thing that's going to be cut of the wages. And what you just said,
Yeah. The
average union worker makes $200 more a week. Now, back to the common sense approach again, and I mentioned this also at the meeting in Delaware. You think about it. Most people, unfortunately, live paycheck to paycheck. So a union member that has their wages and benefits negotiated gets their wages cut by $200. They're not going to get rid of their car. They're not going to take their kid out of college. They're not going to sell their house and move into an apartment or a smaller home. What they're going to do is they're going to dig into that side of the benefit package, and they're going to take away from their benefit package to supplement their income on the check so they can continue their standard of living. And what I'm seeing in building trades locals around in these right-to-work states is the first place they dip into, unfortunately, is their health and welfare. So then they're not covered and they don't have insurance, and we all know what road that leads down to, and that's the conversation we're having, like I said, with people in the state of Ohio that are in government, and I think they understand it, is somebody's going to have to pay for their health care. Somebody's going to have to pay for their retirement. Wouldn't you rather them pay for it themselves than put that burden on the state?
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know?
Good point.
So,
Good point. Dorsey, I'm looking at my clock. I got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to get into the rollback of overtime pay. And I guess we want to recap the Dad's Day shoot. I'd like to hear all about that. Dorsey Hager on our live line, Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. You can find them at their newly revamped website, columbusconstruction.org. Also, Tim Murphy of Mother Jones Magazine talking about the new activism for Democrats. This is an interesting story. It's all part of America's workforce. Back in a few minutes.
If it impacts the livelihood of Ohio's labor trades, you'll find it in the Labor Citizen. America's oldest labor newspaper still provides the most comprehensive coverage of the issues that matter most to Ohio's union construction industry. Each edition includes information many unions use to send out in a monthly newsletter, along with an interesting mix of feature stories and news. The Labor Citizen is a growing force for Ohio's union construction industry. The full-color tabloid is already being delivered to the active members and retirees from nearly 50 different building trade unions. You won't find this level of coverage anywhere else. But the only way to have this valuable monthly publication delivered to your mailbox is if your local union decides to join. If your building trade union is not receiving the Labor Citizen, ask why at your next regular meeting. Or send an email to info@laborcitizen.com for more information. That email address again is info@laborcitizen.com.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to America's Workforce, broadcast from Ohio for workers around the entire world and archived on awfradio.com. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Dorsey Hager, the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades. All right, talk to me about overtime. I understand that the Labor Secretary is going to rule shortly on, this is something that Obama moved forward on. The conservatives fought it. The corporations fought it. What's the issue right here? Why don't you explain it to our listeners?
Well, you know, President Obama fought hard in his 8 years to kind of change and make the overtime rules a little bit more fair and also bring them up to the cost of living standards. And right now, President Trump has demanded his department, his labor department, to open up a request for information. And what it is it's an attempt to gather information to cut the overtime pay rule, which is, you know, it's extremely critical to the ability for a lot of people in this country to earn a fair wage. And basically, the updated overtime rule raised overtime salary, the threshold, from $23,660 to $47,476. So you have somebody working for a company, you know, they may get promoted into a management position, they may become a supervisor, assistant manager, whatever, and instead of paying them hourly, right away they're switched to salary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody making $23,660 can work 50, 60, 70, 80 hours a week, and because they're salary, they're not entitled to any overtime. So what President Obama did was he raised that threshold to $47,476 that a person would have to earn, and then they could work more than 40 hours a week without being under these overtime rules. Well, the new administration obviously getting a lot of pressure from business, and I remember when President Obama got this through, a lot of people weren't excited about it. But, you know, if this were fully implemented, the updated rule would extend overtime eligibility to 4.9 million working people, and it would make it harder for employers to deny unemployment to another 7.6 million working people. So the secretary, the labor secretary, I don't have the exact quote, but basically she's came out and said that the Obama-era overtime rule is way too generous to workers, way too generous.
Boy, that's too bad. That's too bad.
Yeah, yeah, and I can remember going to seminars and classes about this when this was being rolled out because I wanted to have a good understanding of it to be able to speak to it. And granted, it doesn't affect our members because we work under collective bargaining agreements, but I wanted to be able to speak to friends and family. And you know, I have friends that work in businesses or work here and work there, and you know, their biggest, you know, complaint against the Obama overtime rule was that it reduces the freedom of the employer. And I'm like, well, yeah, it reduces the freedom of the employer. You know, if you have an employee and they're working in retail or they're working in restaurant or they're working in food service and they're an assistant manager and their days off are Monday and Tuesday and you decide you need them to come in on Monday because you have a banquet or something, that's their day off. They should be paid overtime. You know what I mean? That's like
right.
Their Saturday or their Sunday. You can have them come in for no pay because they're in a salaried position and there's no overtime eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
So President Obama obviously saw that this was an issue. His former labor secretary obviously saw this was a huge issue, and they wanted to help, you know, some people, you know, in that, I don't even want to say middle class, $23,000 a year I think would be lower middle class if it is in the middle class. They want to help get some more of those people into the middle class to earn the wages that were fair that they deserved. And now it looks like this is definitely going to be stricken and it's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, once again, it goes back to elections matter, you know.
Elections have consequences. Elections have consequences. You're absolutely right.
Absolutely. There's a petition. I noticed this the other day. Jobs with Justice there's a ton of them over on the Labor Federation website. If you go to AFL-CIO.org, Jobs with Justice or JWJ.org, you can petition Secretary Acosta on this. Let him know why working men and women are counting on him to implement the overtime rule. So we'll see what happens. All right, one more here. Dad's Day shoot. What's this all about?
Well, we had our annual Dad's Day shoot, and that's our benefit to for the National Building Trades for Dollars Against Diabetes, and it all goes towards diabetes research. And on the national level, of course, the Building Trades programs has raised millions and millions of dollars for diabetes research. 100% goes to helping, obviously, find a cure for diabetes, which is a horrible disease in this country and affects so many people. Here on the local level, we've been doing events for over 20 years. We used to do a golf outing. Now we do what's called a sporting clay shoot, which we have a lot of, obviously, gun enthusiasts, hunting enthusiasts in our organizations, and it's a great, great, great time. This was our guys decided they wanted to do a little bit different because there's something, so many golf outings are done in the summer, especially political fundraisers and stuff like that. So many. So we wanted to do something different. And this year was our biggest one ever. 35 shooters came out, shot, had a little something to eat, free door prizes, raffled off some stuff. Just a great time, great event. The Bricklayers team led by Ken Cadella were the winners. Unfortunately, the lowest shooting team was my team, and my 29 out of 50 did not help us very much. But and we even kind of segue into something. We even had my intern on my team, who's you know, every year I get an intern from Ohio State, and I had this great. I mean, he's a kid. I'm going to call him a kid because he's a kid. He's 19, but I had this great kid intern. He's a political science major at Ohio State, incredibly sharp, Army ROTC, and very, very good. He did a great job in the clay shoot, but unfortunately his score could not pull my score or the score of our other teammates up, so we didn't do very well. So, but my intern, Andrew Blumenschein, I'll give him a little shout-out. What a great guy. He helped me out tremendously this year with our political screening. Our Dad's Day shoot that we just talked about, he went to a lot of events. I was able to introduce him to a lot of people, help him, you know, kind of learn, navigate the system a little bit, meet some people, meet a lot of politicians, meet a lot of staffers and stuff. Tell you a quick story. He played in a couple of fundraisers with me, a couple of golf outings, and he was amazed that we play in these fundraisers and that they give away stuff. So he won a Yeti cooler at a fundraiser, and he's like, "Do I get to keep this?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you want it? Yeah, heck yeah!" So we're driving back from our dad's day. We had cleaned up everything. We're getting everything. We're taking it back to my office in storage. And on the way back, there was a city councilwoman from Westerville who needed to talk to me about some pending legislation. And she was kind of out running around, and it was the middle of the afternoon. And she calls me. She's like, "Dorsey, I need to meet with you and talk to you about this." And I'm like, "Okay." I'm like, "Do you want to meet it here?" She's like, "No, no." She's like, "You know, I don't want to meet in a bar." She's like, "It's not lunch. I don't want to meet at a restaurant." She's like, "I know this is a weird question." She's like, "Do you like blizzards?" And I'm like, "I love blizzards." She's like, "Well, let's meet at this Dairy Queen here in downtown Westerville." So I said, "Come on, Andrew." I said, "We're going to meet, you know, the city councilwoman at Dairy Queen, you know, for blizzards." And he's like, "Man," he's like, "I got to play in some golf outings. I got to, you know, basically run your political screening where I got to meet all these great people." He goes, "I got to shoot in the sporting clay shoot." He goes, "I got to go to a Clipper game and sit in the suite," which, you know, we have the Clippers, a AAA affiliate of the Indians. And he goes, "And I got to have ice cream with a city councilwoman." He goes, "I've had a pretty good summer. Pretty good summer." He goes, "Not a whole lot I can put on a resume, but a pretty good summer."
That was fun.
I think we can find some stuff to put on our resume too, Andrew. But yeah, you've had a pretty good summer.
That's cool. That's a cool story.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you go. I know you got the big game tonight, Indiana and Ohio State.
Bucks. Come on. Yeah. Thursday night, ESPN, the nation watching. JT Barrett coming back as quarterback. Greg Schiano and the fierce defense. I'm interested to see what happens tonight. We also got the last preseason game tonight, Bears-Browns, right?
That's right, Bears and Browns. And you heard about Joe Hayden, huh?
I did hear about Joe Hayden, but you know what? I can't question any of that. I think Hugh's got the team going in the right direction. I love the idea of giving DeShone Kizer a chance to play. The defense looks incredible, especially the front seven, the line, the linebackers, Christian Kirksey. I was really impressed with how well they played down in Tampa in the rain and the elements against a very potent, high-profile Tampa Bay offense. So I'm excited, man. We still got to get through the playoffs with the Indians. We talked about that, but I'm really excited for Browns football. I think they're going to be a lot better this year, a lot better.
Let's hope so. Yes. You keep the faith. Have a wonderful Labor Day. Any special plans coming up for this weekend?
A little bit of rest and relaxation, couple picnics, maybe a lunch here and there. Biggest plans, hopefully, for this Labor Day is to recuperate after a big Buckeye win tonight.
There you go. There you go, buddy. You take care. And we'll talk to you in a month, okay?
All right. Thanks so much, Flash. Talk to you later.
All right. Dorsey Hager, who is the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. Again, that website, columbusconstruction.org. Quick break. Tim Murphy of Mother Jones Magazine coming up next. You are listening to America's Workforce.